bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, that's me.
So we had a pretty awesome thing happened. One of our own branched out into the more formalized sort of podcasting world, I guess we'd describe it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this is one of those rubber meets the road moments where it's like we talk a lot of game about how to be a successful independent creator. This is one of those moments where we get to see whether or not our advice pans out. Justin, how's it looking so far?
Good, obviously. Thank you to everybody who subscribed. Raise the Dead was up in the top 100 for news. I think it peaked around the high 50s. But the algorithm is far different than it was back in the day. I will say that there is a much less of an onus put on new subscribers, it seems. Obviously, new subscribers got us up into the top 100, and it kept us there for a solid 5 days before it started to lose a little bit of traction. But I've gotten the sense in terms of some of my reading that a lot of that is based on new episodes. So it also rewards, stuff coming out. So I would expect for it to go back up as we release the second episode tomorrow. But so far, the reaction's been amazing. I've gotten a ton of great feedback on it. It's always heartening when for friends and fellow creators to say that they are excited by it and it makes them want to do other cool stuff. That's like the highest honor, in my opinion. And the feedback from the people have been great. It's already got, I think over 200 reviews on iTunes, and it's overwhelmingly positive. And it looks like it's on track to be the biggest thing that I do personally. So that it would have a bigger RSS feed than politics. Politics.
I'm looking at like the top new shows and news right now, and it's on there. And you're ahead of like shows by MSNBC, Wall Street, The Washington Post, whatever. Like that's an amazing. You look at the stuff you're launched with and the stuff that you're. The other names around you, like I know all these names. I mean, this is a very different podcast world than it was 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And the fact that you're just holding your own there is amazing.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing that I've kind of had to understand also is just that, like, this is not a show where, like anything else I've ever done, where I'm going to put it out and people are going to like get a sense of it. But then past episode 3 or 4, they're going to know whether or not they like me as a performer. They like, me covering stuff. This is something that at a certain point will only get more and more complete to the point where it will just be one complete bingeable thing. So I am honored that people are really, really excited and are going to go week by week with me through the release schedule. But I also know that this is not something that's going to lose steam once we get to the end. Once we get to the end, it's there's an argument for it gaining steam.
Right now, like you launched what you did was on the steam of you and your support you had for it. Now it is going to be the algorithm taking over as more episodes go up. And that's the fascinating thing is to see, I've been watching this through Amazon and watching how that evolves over time and how you get that second wind, which can sometimes be bigger than the first wind. When you get that first wind and there's genuine enthusiasm and people are listening to it, and it does matter. It actually matters now to listen to things and stuff and not like subscribe and forget. There's a lot of these things you know, in 2019 are different than it was a few years ago. But I think because of the quality of it, I think quality gets rewarded more now, I guess is what I'm saying, than rather just blind press the button, get it. So,
man, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because that was the thought that I had. I'm sure we mentioned this last week is, you know, I reread for the second time the formula where the first law of success, as it's put in that book, is that performance drives success. And then down the road, there's the question of in the arts, when performance cannot be measured, network effects drive success. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, we're a bit in the mushy middle. We're not exactly at trying to evaluate performance art or a Jackson Pollock painting or whatever, but it is clear the difference between a polished podcast and an unpolished podcast. And Justin particularly has been doing, I think it's fair to say, low fidelity, high iterations of his daily podcast and politics, politics, politics. Whereas this is a different game. This is very clear that hours and hours and hours and days have gone into the production of this. So I have to believe that you're competing in a different marketplace than you've ever competed before. And that it's very clear to anybody who listens to the first 5 minutes of any of these episodes that all of a sudden it's like, this is a qualitatively different game that's being played. And in that case, whereas I'm going to say it's less ambiguous whether or not this is quality or not. And I think we're closer to the first law of success where performance drives success. And I think that regardless of how you did in the first week, much like a Dan Carlin, your work is going to stand on its own, and it's going to be word of mouth that spreads the word on all of these.
Yeah, and that's the idea. And you know, in this next episode coming up, there's a lot of stuff with big kind of boldface names that you probably would not be aware of, and that's going to be one of those things that I think is where the research sort of shines. And now I can, you know, sort of reveal our own history to us in a interesting and fun way. So if my tone is anything other than being absolutely super excited, it is not because of anything other than, I'm as thrilled to put it out into the world as anybody else is to listen to it. And I'm now just sort of kind of re-nervous to put out this next one and just kind of see how that affects everybody.
Which, by the way, is the right time to be nervous, because anybody could get excited for a launch. It's that week over week momentum that you should be scared of. And good news, spoiler alert, the second episode is as good, if not better, than the first. But I don't blame you for being nervous, because now you're establishing a pattern, you're establishing a trajectory, you're establishing momentum.
Question for you. So how many episodes are going to be in this run?
Six.
What, and I'm going to throw out, this is a dumb idea, I'm going to throw the dumb idea out there. Is there something to, like, episode 3 or whatever, launching a Patreon or something for the season 2?
So I've tried to stay away from Patreon on this, just because I'm already doing a big Patreon push on the politics thing. And that's not to say that normally goes against my philosophy on Patreon, which is like, just make buckets and let people pay you money however they would like to pay you. The thing that is definitely going to happen is the ebook and the audiobook going up around episode 3, because that is the monetization strategy for this project. And I want to kind of get into that world. But right now, I guess the Patreon has not been something that I've thought of, largely because I still don't know exactly what I want to do for a season 2 and what kind of expectations I want to have on that.
Here's my thinking. Our Kickstarter, maybe, even, because like I think that monetization strategy can be helpful, but the challenge is that they have the content, they have the thing. You know, I'm listening, I have the thing that I like, this is the thing I like, and I do not know the appeal of the transcripts, and I don't know the appeal of the audiobook when I'm enjoying the thing. And I'm thinking, like, I have like, I don't know if I ever supported Defunctland, but I know I bought the book they did because they did this sort of extra thing. And I was just throwing that out there. Like, is there like, oh, it started as like, hey, you like this? I'm going to be doing season two of Raise the Dead, you know, and help me pick the topics.
So the audiobook and the ebook both have a bonus episode that is not going to be released in the public feed. So that is the enticement of why you would want to support the project, and also the idea that you'd be able to listen, you would be able to binge everything now if you got those in either those two mediums. I don't know. I mean, that's the other thing, is that I've seen Patreons for similar podcasts and they all feel a little awkward. Like, I don't know if I've seen a Patreon for anything like this that I felt happy as a contributor to. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was a patron for the Cocaine and Rhinestones one, you know, when they first ended it. Or first began their Patreon, but even then, that's like pretty much just the dude making a YouTube video once a month talking about his research process, which is fine, but I don't know if I feel like pumped for it. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have a good answer as to why not, I guess.
Brian, your thoughts on that?
Normally, I would be in favor of, if you have attention, and I think we've talked about it a little bit on this show, but I'm developing this model, this picturesque circle that's story, attention, sales, and it goes in a circle, each one serving the other master. When you have attention, what you don't want to do is try to go backwards. Imagine that overnight you became famous for being the guy who barfed up a perfect rainbow of unicorn flavor colors or whatever. Then now that you have all this attention, you're like, oh, what I want is credibility. So finally I'll cash in on story. That's you going the wrong direction, because you'll be laughed at for your poetry if you read it on your channel now that you have attention. So going the right way around would be to go ahead and do all the ad dollars, be the guy who puked perfect rainbow, and then eventually you'll be able to buy the artistic support and writers and development that will earn you a legitimate spot in the story side of things. So likewise, in this case, I think that Justin has harvested the goodwill that comes from 11 years of being in front of a camera and being in the ears of a passionate community. The good news is that the story element, that currency is so very, very strong in this that I think it will stand on its own. And I would, to my surprise, Andrew, I guess I'm saying I would encourage him not to harvest in this case, but instead to double down and reinvest in the story side, build up that goodwill. Like, if he can get some number of people across the line of six episodes, because podcasts, especially limited edition podcasts that stay around for years and years and years, they tend to pick up fans years after the case. And so at three episodes in, I don't know that you've earned enough to harvest much, but at the end of the episode, if the last episode ends with, do you want to follow what's next? Now, let me harvest by getting you to sign up on my email list or getting you inside the fold of the patronage or whatever. That feels like the right call to me, because that will play.
Yeah, I guess that's exactly it. I guess that's the thing that concerned me, is just the idea, if you have a thing out there, let's say it's getting hundreds of thousands of downloads, but because it's this isolated, separate thing, it's not like a YouTube channel or something else, then when Justin does a new thing, people may never know, because I found the Sod podcast on iTunes. I listened to it. I love it. This is great. And then it reaches its completion state, and 6 months down the line, 3 months, 2 weeks, whatever, he puts out something new. He can always put an episode saying, I've got a thing new, but the number of people that are going to listen to that versus listen to the peak periods of that. And that's a thing that makes me go like, man, is that losing the opportunity to either do a harvesting and or collect those?
This is actually a really good point. So when you experience a peak, I think it's important to dial in on who is it that makes up this peak. For example, in the run-up, as we got close to a million subscribers on the Modern Rogue channel, we the algorithm, I suspect there's a little bit of kind of a rubber banding that happens where as you get close to a milestone, the algorithm just makes you a little more approachable and spreads you to more folks. So all of a sudden in 2.5-3 months, we got nearly 200,000 new subscribers. And that is showing its face as we do stuff. For example, some of our classically most popular episode have been a couple on cigar smoking, right? Kind of fundamentals of understanding how to enjoy a cigar or whatever. And even when those came out, there was some number of those people that were like, cigar smoking, what do you love, cancer or whatever? And we're like, no, we just like cigars. That's a thing. And so now, 2 years after those initial episodes, we did a sponsored episode. There's a cigar club that sent us a thing to unbox. And we're getting some number of people that are very clearly part of the new 200,000 subscribers who don't know the past history of us being guys who really dig cigars. So for them, it's a bit of a shock, a surprise in their minds, off character, or, you know, like, what, do you love cancer? And we have to all over again say, no, we just like cigars. And so likewise, I think that it's important for Justin to recognize that in the future, there'll be people coming to his story after the fact, and it's only after they've bought all the way in. It's very difficult to spend 3.5 full hours listening to Justin at his most polished, at his best, and then have a small ask of join our club and say, no, you're a jerk. You know what I mean? Whereas it's easy if you're midway through that process.
Yeah. So Justin, suggestion, would you be, how hard would it be to put like a MailChimp sign up on Raise the Dead?
Oh, not hard at all. On the website?
Yeah, I think that might be a I don't want to be armchair quarterbacking, but we're just, you know, hey, it's what we do after things. I wonder if you did a thing like that, because that could be a thing like, hey, if you want to keep up to date what I'm doing, what's coming next, whatever, you know, and about information about Raise the Dead season 2, you know, just have an email harvest, you know, just start collecting those.
Yeah. Certainly that is, that's definitely a strategy. I definitely should.
I know you're overwhelmed and I apologize for that. I'm just thinking out loud going, oh, hey, here's the thing. You know, like, how do you cap, like what we did with my books was, at the end of the book, I put my email address and say, if you wanted to follow further, and I built up my email list from there for like my books, you know, and that was super instrumental for launching new books, was because just a few hundred people, because the ones that said, oh yeah, I want to follow them. How do I do this? But it's got to be I got to put the idea in your head. Yes, you can follow me. This is where you can get more info, you know, through the email. A few hundred people on that list at the start was amazing, because those people were the first ones to buy the books and to review the books, and, you know, versus just a list of a bunch of randos. So anyhow, again, what you've done is amazing. And I know the workload is incredible. And I'm just, I apologize for saying this, but I feel like, as your friends would say, like, here's a thing to maybe think about for, you know, like episode 4 or whatever.
No. It's definitely good advice.
Yeah. So, I'm excited. It's nice to watch this. I was just telling my girlfriend about how it's neat to see a friend who's great at a lot of things and great at stuff find a focal point for the thing and to make a thing that's a really defining kind of thing. And I think that, you know, this is, you know, could be a gateway to other opportunities and stuff. And it's nice to have a thing that people go, you know, what do you do? And, you know, to pick a thing up and say, and that's what you've been doing, podcasts and stuff like this, but to say, like, this is the best representation of what I do. You know, this thing here, you know, will give you a really good idea of what I am. And I like that you have this now.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably the best, the coolest feedback that I've gotten so far is kind of along those lines of people saying just like, you know, oh, I never really totally like listened to something that you did and said, oh, wow, like that's it. This is what you were meant to do. Which is cool. That's really, really rad to hear. And, I just hope people like it.
Oh, Brian, you want to read the gun bait comment there?
which one? Oh, Gunbait says Justin Robert Young. I normally don't take too well to politics. As a matter of fact, I despise them. However, your new podcast, hashtag Raise the Dead, is fantastic. It's very well produced. Your cadence mixed with your excitement made it quite enjoyable. I can't wait for the next episode. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've shared this with Justin yet. I've encountered that sentiment full on in the wild, like hanging out at the Wizard Academy on Friday. There's a friend of the show that has only recently kind of fallen into our ecosystem that walked up. He was walking by and we were doing our regular, Hey. And then he stopped mid tracks and then turned and he goes, Justin's podcast. And then suddenly no words were spoken, but I was like, right. And he's like, holy, that's what makes me think that you're firmly rooted in the performance drive success category of the formula.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just feeling it with other creators. Like that's where I know that it's like other people who have done really cool stuff recognizing it as really cool stuff. And also it's just when the feedback has kind of come from outside of the core demo. You know, there's a lot of people that are like aware of me but aren't like Night Attack fans or aren't PX3 fans or Weird Things fans that have reached out and said really, really rad stuff. And I suspect that, you know, as we continue to go further into this story and, you know, the cool thing now is like, I know what's coming. And like, I know that there's a lot of really rad, like this is not a front loaded thing. The best episodes of the series are toward the end. So I hope other people agree.
That's exciting. Very excited for what's going to happen. I mean, it's just following the journey and what comes next and all that. And we're all very, very proud. So we're trying to say, we're all very proud.
You know? Well, thank you.
And I've been recommending it to my family members and stuff. I was talking to some political stuff with my brother yesterday, who's, you know, not a technology guy, I'll put it that way. And, you know, we're talking about some political thing. Like, oh, you should check out Justin's. Like, oh, send me the link, da, 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 da. So, you know, I mean, it's neat to have that kind of thing. You're like, brother, have you heard the word?
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think that's, I did an interview with, our friend Merrill Barr, who writes for Forbes and covers streaming and technology, and he's a screenwriter himself. He interviewed me on his podcast Word Tetris about just kind of the writing, and it was a really cool experience because this is an application for, you know, a lot of the stuff that Andrew and I talk a lot about in terms of like structuring a story and creating characters and creating a narrative that can kind of engross people and bring people in. And that's always tricky with history stuff because, you know, you can be tempted to want to sort of shift away from the literal truth so you can make your larger point. But thankfully the characters that we're dealing with here are kind of so big and the stakes are so high that really the question was more, how you focus the story as opposed to, making anything up.
Wonderful. Picks.
Ooh, hey, I don't know what I got for you in terms of picks. I'm trying to try on some different apps, but I haven't really found anything new in the games department that I super duper love. Do you have a recommendation, Bryce?
I actually just started playing an Apple Arcade, or it's on Apple Arcade, but I think you can get it on PC too. It's called Discolored. It is a sort of first-person puzzling game, so kind of misty. It's really short. I've just found out. I started playing it because The Verge wrote an article about it, and I had already downloaded it, but had never opened it. And I started playing it this morning, and I think I am almost nearly done with it.
Oh, wow.
So it's about 2 hours or so. But it's an interesting sort of game where you are in this little vignette, and there's no color, and you do different things to bring color to whatever the space is. I think it's neat, and it's I think for a short puzzle game, it's cool. I think the thing it's sort of missing is logic. You know, you just kind of do things, and it's kind of like an old adventure game where you get stuff and you find a hole.
There's only three things to do, and once you've tried two of them, guess what the right answer is?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
But if you have our Apple Arcade, I think it's neat. They make. So you know that the PlayStation and the Xbox controllers now work on the iPhone built in. They make I'll find the Amazon link and put it in the show notes, but they make controller supports. You clamp it over the center of the controller, and it's got a little hinge on it that you can put your phone in, and so you can basically play your phone mounted on top of this controller. So you're not doing like the on-screen joysticks,
yeah, sure,
because those always stink.
Not a fan of that on-screen experience.
It's not great, but almost all every Apple Arcade game I've tried to play using the controller has had controller support. So I think, you know, and the thing I've got is super cheap. It might have been $10, maybe. So I think that's a really solid way to go too with the Apple Arcade. So it's a discount.
Yeah, same about getting a controller. And Discolored looked interesting. I read some reviews that were sort of meh on it, but it looks beautiful. And you know, and do I hear a 2-hour game, my ears perk up because
I mean,
welcome to my attention span.
That's the beginning and end of it, right? Is it's if you can get over the fact that you really aren't given any story, you're just kind of doing this thing. I think it makes. And you know that it's going to be short from the get-go. I think it's I don't want to say it's tolerable because I think the puzzle stuff is really neat. But you know, I think it's a nice little experience.
Anybody else?
I don't know. I watched Mr. Robot. That's ending. That's about the end of my thing. So
what did you think of all
those loose ends? They sure are being tied up. Mm-hmm. So if you've been enjoying Mr. Robot and want to see all those loose ends,
well, now you don't want answers or what?
I mean, I do, but it's weird to. I mean, look, there are certain shows that have earned the right to drift across the finish line. You know, Game of Thrones was one, Mr. Robot's one.
But that's the thing you say when you don't like how the season's going.
Well, it's fine. I mean, they already have resolved the most major points. Mm-hmm. And from here on out, I'm minorly involved. I'm like, well, I'm happy those two got together. I'm happy this person found that. I'm happy they figured out a better solution than originally proposed. You know, we're getting to that phase as we get to the end where it's like, remember this character who was a big deal for about 7 episodes and then vanished? He's uh-huh. back. Ever wonder what happened to him? End of episode.
This is a very sort of tough episode, the one that just came out this week, because it follows that really dense, very heavy, very, you know, big action sort of episode. And I know you don't watch the next week on stuff for the shows, but there are still two very big things left unresolved that I think the next 3 episodes
sure
have just enough time. And we don't have to deal with the people that were in those episodes.
Having said so, this week was a fine vignette. It was a very sweet story that I liked.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, if I was going to pick one episode to seduce someone into getting into Mr. Robot, it probably would not be one of the last 4 episodes of season 4.
Not even? Oh, you know, okay.
You know, the challenge is like, because I think part of the big frustration with Game of Thrones the last two seasons was it was wrapping things up and not telling us a story. And this is how this ends. And this is how that ends. It's like, man, thanks, Wikipedia. And
right. But again, like if it's earned, I think you get to get away with that. Right. Or at least in my heart as a fan.
Well, Game of Thrones got snubbed at the Golden Globes, and you know the reaction for the final season. Certainly, I mean, when you have, yeah, I feel so bad for the actors because they have to be—they're so defensive over it because they've been so criticized for things that they put so much hard work into it, and for people feel this amazing gift all of a sudden didn't give us everything we wanted, and the bitterness. But it is hard, you know. But I like Mr. Robot. I watched the first 2 seasons, but then I just sort of like, kind of it was sort of like me in like Legion. I'm like, ah, cool. All right. I'm sure I'll like it if I watch it, but there's a lot of other stuff out there.
Yeah, the around the end of season 2 was when I felt it got a I don't want to say, if I say in the weeds, it's going to sound like I wasn't enjoying it. I enjoyed it even then, but you could tell it was like, oh, you're going for some really big, big, you know, out there stuff. I've enjoyed season four more that they've sort of decided to wrap it up and they're kind of collapsing things. And, and that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I should get back into it. Your recommendation has swayed me, Brian.
Yay, nailed it.
Noted. Like, my book list is now things Brian told me to read that I didn't get around to reading, and then I started reading and go, man, this is amazing. I gotta go.
By the way, I derive so much joy from being that guy that gets you to read all that.
Yeah, you are. You are, sir. You very much. My pick is... Did I talk much? I mentioned that when I did my try to write a novel in a day stunt. It was, I used the Google Voice recorder, but then I started playing around the otter.ai. And then I'm like, I wonder what's like the best transcription service I can find out there. And so I played with, I built an API for working with Google's speech to text. And then I tried Amazon's with punctuation. So I compared Otter, Amazon, and Google, all three of them together, to see which ones gave me the best results. And far from a scientific experiment, I came away with Otter being the best out of them. The one difference is that in the Amazon's plugged in its own API system, so unless you want to build something, it's not really practical. Between Otter and Google, I think Otter was better. Now, the difference, though, is the Google Recorder, which is the app they have on the Pixel phones, which now works like they've expanded to other Android phones, is completely free. And so it does transcription on device, so it's completely free. It provides you a pretty simple transcript with timestamps and stuff and a voice recorder of it, so you can use it free forever on your phone and never have to pay anything, anybody, whatever. Otter costs money at certain tiers, but Otter is... It's 1 month, like you get 600 free minutes a month. And then if you go to like $10 a month, it's like 6,000 minutes, which is, if you're trying to use Google's API service, like basically like build an app to use it on your own, like I've done, it's way more expensive than Otter. Otter's got the best prices of anything that I've seen. So if you're looking for a cool app on the iPhone to do transcription, Otter.ai is great. If you have an Android phone that will use Google Recorder, then you can use Google Recorder and pay nothing forever. But Otter.ai is my pick. The long way around it, folks. Otter.ai.
You heard it here first, people.
Yeah. So, but Recorder's great too, but Otter.ai, like I just looked at the quality and it's very good. So, there you go.
Nailed it.
Yeah. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.